You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
If you or your patients struggle with muscle cramps, spasms, soreness, or restless leg syndrome, you're going to want to hear about our non-opioid TheraWorks Relief. TheraWorks Relief is a clinically proven and published locally acting topical solution that prevents and relieves muscle cramps, spasms, and soreness in the legs and feet. In a research study including patients diagnosed with restless leg syndrome, TheraWorks Relief was shown to reduce symptoms commonly associated with accompanying RLS, including muscle cramps and spasms. Muscle cramps are reported as a side effect of hundreds of prescription medications, from intravenous iron sucrose and conjugated estrogens to statins and diuretics. By managing muscle cramps, TheraWorks Relief supports adherence, helping patients stay on important and often life-saving medications. TheraWorks Relief comes in an easy-to-use, fast-absorbing, non-greasy foam that can prevent muscle cramps and spasms with just a few simple applications a day. To learn more about TheraWorks Relief, go to TheraWorksRelief.com and click on the healthcare professional link.
Welcome to the Pharmacy Marketing Simplified Podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Pharmacy Marketing Simplified focuses on easy and proven marketing tips from pharmacy owners and industry experts to leverage in your independent pharmacy business. This podcast is all about pharmacy marketing and how to be successful in today's competitive marketplace.
This is Nicole McClure, president of GRX Marketing and host of the Pharmacy Marketing Simplified Podcast, which is part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Today, we are bringing you a special podcast series in conjunction with Cardinal Health. I'm thrilled to be speaking to today's guests, Tony Bastian, a local independent pharmacist, Richard Levy, cardiologist, and Peter Lowe, another local independent pharmacist. Welcome to the show, all of you.
Thank you.
Before we get started and dive into questions, if you guys just want to each give our listeners a little bit of background of our guests today.
My name is Tony Bastian. I practice pharmacy in San Francisco. I'm an independent pharmacist, and my pharmacy is 99.9% professional pharmacy. Where I don't only dispense pharmacy related prescriptions, but also we do some clinical activities like medication therapy management, diabetes education, and biometrics.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Richard Levy. I'm a cardiologist and internist in San Francisco. I have a large primary and secondary vascularly oriented practice. I take care of about 2,000 patients, both primarily and secondarily for cardiac testing. So I have a huge Medicare-based vascular practice, and I work heavily with pharmacists all the time.
My name is Peter Lowe. I'm a pharmacist owner of two independent pharmacies in the San Francisco Chinatown area. I serve a small community with 95% of my patients speaking in Chinese only.
Okay. Well, welcome. We really appreciate all three of you being here. I guess, can you kind of just tell us, you know, how you guys kind of got together and what the relationship is between the three of you?
Well, it all started year 2006 with Medicare Modernization Act. Dr. Levy, with Medicare Modernization Act, with the Medicare Part D, when that was implemented, at the time, something new emerged for pharmacists, and that was medication therapy management. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Levy initially did not understand what was this all about. He thought that this was an interference in their medical practice, but then later on, he figured out that there was a big need for pharmacists to get involved with this type of practice, mm-hmm. medication therapy mm-hmm. management. And gradually our relationship increased. And then one day he came back to me and he said, why don't you come up and publish something like this for us, for physicians to know about what you pharmacists do.
Right.
And then I said, no, we're not going to do something like that. We're going to do something else. we're going to do so. You and me, we are going to start working for patient outcome. Oh, he said, well, let's do it. Okay. He was, let's do it. And so then we coordinated our efforts together. And then we brought in my friend Peter Lowe with us. And then as we deal with multiple ethnicities in our area, mm-hmm, we got sure. all kinds of languages, all kinds of ethnicities. It's very interesting. So we said, let's embark upon on metabolic diseases. Because metabolic diseases, as you know, they drain a big part or big percentage of the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. Because when we were talking about a cardiologist, he is not only playing with the heart, he's playing with, it's a vascular disease, so right. it affects every single part of your body.
Correct.
Am I right or not?
Yeah, you're right.
So we're talking about the big picture, and there is a big potential there for pharmacists to get involved with physicians to enhance the patient's outcome or quality of life. I keep on saying quality of life because it's important.
Yeah, very.
It's important because that's one way for patients to understand why quality of life is important, because they will understand only and only when you have a better outcome. So if there is a partnership between a physician and a pharmacist for patient outcome, then the quality of life is better mm-hmm. and everybody is better. Pharmacist is happier, the patient is happier, and then so is the physician, because we are all graded right now based upon outcome and quality
exactly.
of life.
Yep, with star ratings and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like that you guys recognized the importance, or you did, of the doctor-pharmacist relationship and kind of how that just helps the overall patient's health then. And that's kind of what started this journey.
Yes. And we published, we embarked upon this study that mm-hmm. we did on our own. And then we worked very hard for a couple of years. And then we've shown that there is an improvement. And we believed in it, and we continued with that. We wanted to expand the study statewide, and we wanted to bring in more doctors and more patients to come up with a larger study based upon big outcome study. It takes about 2 years, but we couldn't get the fund.
Okay. I guess, so why is there a need for a good community pharmacist? How do they go beyond just filling prescriptions, and maybe how are they different than maybe a pharmacist at a larger chain pharmacy?
Well, let me talk about that from the physician's perspective.
Perfect.
Pharmacists can help with that. Anyway, so vascular patient has 5, 10, 15 diseases. 5, 10, 15 medicines, they probably hopefully don't have that many diseases, but they basically have hypertension, secondary heart failure, strokes, diabetes, etc. And so it's hard enough for the cardiologist or the internist to know how to manage that particular specialty of medicines. But as soon as you, because the patient is of Medicare age, they have erectile dysfunction or cognition issues or gait issues, they now have a whole bunch of other new medicines. Mm-hmm. So who's going to coordinate that? The cardiologist and internist barely know their primary medicines. How somebody's going to regulate them in terms of whether there's interactions, whether there's duplications, whether there's some sort of outliers that I don't know with compliance, who's taking what medicines is vitally important. So we need somebody to basically secondarily educate the patients. We can't do that in a 15 or 20 minute office visit. And so whether it's diabetic education, whether it's medication coordination, whether it's a dietitian coordinated, we want somebody to help educate and then report back to us. So from a physician's perspective, it's really important for me to be able to talk on a regular basis to a community pharmacist where I know it's Tony or Peter. I know who I'm talking about. They know who I'm talking about, as opposed to a rotating pharmacist, mm-hmm. which is what you're going to get at a chain. The second important thing is that, and this goes into future directions, if you have something that's quantifiable, standardized, computer-oriented, the language remains the same. P Peter's approach to an MTM may be different than Tony's, and it becomes important for everybody to have the same coordination aspects to get back to the doctors. So I think Cardinal's ability to coordinate it back in for that, where the language is the same, the teaching is the same, the interchangeability via computer systems the same, is vitally important.
Do you think that, you know, patients in general, are they more confused about their general health these days, or do you feel like they're more educated? Kind of what's that sense that you get when you speak to a patient?
They're confused, yeah. Because the average patients the average patient that I see in my pharmacy, they take at least 15 different prescriptions. So some of them, they take 30, 40, 50 pills per day.
Right.
So that's confusing, especially with elderly population. Mm-hmm. That becomes very complicated. They need somebody to follow up with their medications at the pharmacy level. Somebody who could educate them, who could make them understand with their own language, mm-hmm. What it means to take these medications, why they are taking and how they are taking. It's very important. And to communicate, and this is very important, to communicate whatever goes on between the pharmacist and the patient to the physician real time.
So, secondarily for that, the patients have the internet as their educational device, right? And then they have, you know, Papa Joe or Uncle Pete or something like that has the same disease and I'm taking the same medicine. Why can't I? Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, face to face, Marcus Welby types of approaches are really important to communicate directly to the patient and then have a secondary reinforcer of that in a different environment, because the patients, when they come to the doctor, are coughing and they're scared and you're going to tell them bad news, whereas if you go to the pharmacy, they're much more relaxed, mm-hmm. they're more in their normal environment, they're much more receptive to learning.
Yeah, excellent, so, excellent point.
I know the big business, they're trying to tilt that pharmacist-patient relationship toward mail orders, mm-hmm. and or other means, mm-hmm. For somebody to talk to them 5,000 miles away. That's, in my opinion, that's a lot of rubbish. You can't perform, you can't get outcome like that. There has to be face-to-face or somebody you know personally. You have to understand their ethnicity. You have to understand their culture. You have to understand where they're coming from. You have to, you know, there are a lot of things involved. Mm-hmm. Somebody sitting 5,000 miles away is sitting in front of a computer and they're checking back and forth. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, definitely.
It doesn't work like
that. And then secondarily, when you have that face-to-face education, to be able to pat somebody on the head and say, my God, your sugars went down 50 points, or you lost 3 pounds, or 3 months ago your A1C was 8 and now it's 7.4, and I look at my output on my eye health and I'm walking 10,000 steps a day. The reinforcement on the education face-to-face is critical.
Yeah, definitely agree. Because
the patients in my community are more confused about their medications because of the language barrier.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so we took time, you know, take time to explain to them, you know, the direction, the usage, and, you know, what are the side effects they'll watch for. So we do take time. You know, early in my career, I served the community for the last 30 years. So I know them well, and then I know that what are the things I want them so that they may take it properly and that so they'll get the result.
Yeah, and I think to your point with the expansion of mail order and call centers, I mean, it's just causes concern for adherence to continue to go down because, you know, why would a patient want to call a 1-800 number to, you know, ask a question about something, yeah, side effect and things like that. So
yeah, that will increase the cost. That will increase the cost. It will make life more miserable to the patients. With all what you are adding between me and the patients, a lot of commission-oriented people, they want to make money here and money there. It doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. This is healthcare. In healthcare, we have to deliver care.
Exactly.
Not only money, care, mm-hmm. first, and then money comes second.
So in San Francisco, just to reinforce, I have a large number of Asian patients, both Chinese and Japanese. I have a huge number of Filipino patients. I have many Latino patients and Russians, more than I can count. And so San Francisco is not the Midwest, but major urban centers are highly ethnic. And because of that, you need delivery systems on a local basis that can relate to those.
Yeah, good point. So we touched on, you know, why it's important to have that relationship with a community pharmacist. But I guess in your guys' opinion, you know, pharmacists do so much more than just dispense pills these days. You know, a lot of them offer the testings for cholesterol checks and things like that. Can you touch on why it's important to do those types of testing in community pharmacies?
Actually, I was the guy who passed the legislation in California for pharmacies to be able to do that.
I did not know that. That's
right,
awesome.
Right after. Are you from California?
No.
I was the guy. And it's all started from us, actually.
Very cool.
You know, because California pharmacies, when we were doing the study, he was the medical director. You had to have a medical director to be able to perform, you know, blood tests. Mm-hmm. So he was the medical director. CPA, when we published the study, California Pharmacists Association, they asked me to appear in front of the Senate subcommittee to pass the legislation. Now, thanks God, in California, pharmacists can perform this in their facility. But to be able to do something like that, they have to have a platform. Mm-hmm. They have to find that to have a special facility with HIPAA-proof, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. So, which I have. Okay, so that's one thing. It's very important to have something like that right now because that really touches somebody's mind. Mm-hmm. It makes a big difference when they see the biometrics.
Right.
Whether it is cholesterol level, LDL level, HDL level, non-HDL level, et cetera, triglyceride. And then you talk to them about CV risks, et cetera. And then you talk to them about the A1Cs and all of that and the guidelines. They really start thinking about, wow, what's happening with me? Mm-hmm. Especially with metabolic diseases. You can make a difference in their life.
So I think, again, the important thing is two things. One, to go to the lab, usually you have to wait, right? So you go to the pharmacy, it's much more of an educational and coordination facility. But if you're doing your education and right after you have your education, you talk about your adherence, and you see the pharmacist shows you that you've had a 5% improvement in something, you know, the numbers are trending down that acts as a reinforcing tool for the patient for education. So as long as the information both goes to the patient and gets back to the doctor, so the communication piece is really important, it has a huge value. So whether it's weight, whether it's cholesterol, whether it's A1C, glucose, it doesn't matter what you use.
Okay. So you guys have, you know, kind of mentioned a few times about the study that you did. Can you give our listeners a little bit more details on the study?
From what point of view, how we did the study?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We selected 105 patients. And then out of 105 patients, we ended up with about 96 patients at the end because some of them perished. Mm-hmm. Some of them, they discontinued. But I would say about 90% of them approximately were metabolic diseases. Including a big 85% of those were diabetic and all the rest.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we saw these patients for a period of 6 months, baseline, 3 months after, and then another time in 6 months. And we started getting their biometrics the first time. Then we continued having the second time, which is in 3 months, and then another one in 6 months. And then we monitored with them with their blood pressure, blood diabetes, A1C, and then lipids. And then we went over their medications, and we talked to them about their medications to improve their outcome. And then we reported this to the physicians. Accordingly, we made some adjustments. We checked if there were some drug interactions, if there was compliance issues, etc. And then we used at the time we used A1C as a testing machine. And right now, I don't use A1C; I use Athenian, much better. And then we use the LDX machine for to be able to secure all the data for the terms of lipids. Mm-hmm. And then and measure their CV risks as well. And that's what we did. And then we diluted the patients. We had patients, white patients, Oriental patients, a few African-American patients, etc. San Francisco, it's very multi-ethnic, as we mentioned earlier. Yeah, yeah. And we wanted to know, and they were all kinds of nationalities, not only all kinds of languages as well. So, and that's what we did. And then we found out, especially with high-risk patients, we made a difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to amplify on that, we quantified patients by high risk, very high risk, medium risk.
Yes.
And we looked at the different groups and who was getting the most benefit. And so, surprisingly to us, the very high risk patients were actually getting the most benefit, not only in terms of biometric improvement, but also in terms of drug compliance, drug interactions. We even had a survey that was a quality of life survey, and their quality of life was better. So basically, the riskiest patients got the most benefit. Mm-hmm. Looking at this. Mm-hmm. The second thing that was important was, as we talked about in the talk today, initially Tony is very verbose and he would write down all these things and it would be very difficult to follow the verbiage. And so we quickly figured out that we needed standardized programs, standardized language to follow. So standard questions, standard 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 grading systems. We had a base that we could be transportable between Peter and Tony or potentially someplace else. So standardized language longitudinally followed is very important too. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, I just want to add something. Yes, the current system, you know that there is Mirixa and then the outcome.com, etc. They are nice, you know, the programs for MTM, etc. But in my opinion, those are some kind of those are not customized. Mm-hmm. Those are not customized, in my opinion. Because each one of my patients at the pharmacy is different, you know, and I like to have some kind of a system that is custom, that I can customize it and immediately send that information to the physician. Electronically, whatever, or by fax, if he's, or I call them in general, but I'd like to have a facilitator, something that navigates me directly over there.
Right. So
that'll be great.
Yeah.
So we know that there's PBMs that send out wraps of paper.
Yeah.
They talk about MTMs and talk about compliance. And some physicians, I'm sure, look at them, and most physicians basically, if they're lucky, file it into the patient's chart. But the action item on them is pretty cool. So the ability to have a face-to-face, ethnically oriented communication with outcomes, the community that are communicating back is really critical. So it's what the PBMs are doing is not the same thing as what the community pharmacists are doing. Mm-hmm.
And also one other thing, I'd like the physician to order MTM. Because who knows the patient more than anybody else? The physician. Mm-hmm. The physician should be able to say, hey, you're taking so many medications. I'm ordering an MTM. You have to take this, go to an MTM provider. You know, and that MTM provider should get compensated for what they are doing. Right now, there is somebody between me and the patient. It's called Mirexa.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know. And by the time they're sending me this MTM, oh, it's taking a long time. You know, it's too little, too late. They're obsolete. You know what was happening? Am I right or not?
Yeah.
Dr. Levy and me, we have this kind of relationship. He sends me an order as a physician, like a prescription. He says, "I want MTM. I want diabetes education," and he charts it in his documentation. You know, yeah, that's the way it should be. And pharmacists should get paid for this.
I definitely agree. I mean,
and there should be a CPT code for that. There is one, a couple of those, but then I don't care whoever it is. It's either in a cash basis or insurance basis, we have to be able to send that bill directly to the insurance or to directly to Medicare, not to Mirexa, not to MTOutcome.com. Maybe they're listening to me right now. I don't care. But it has to go directly to Medicare for us to be, and we have to document it.
Right, right. Excellent point. So based on the study, your study results, I guess kind of where do you see our industry going in the future? You've kind of just kind of touched on that a bit, but any other thoughts on where the healthcare industry, independent pharmacy is trending in the future?
My personal point of view is that there should be a new model. The model is based upon physician, pharmacy, pharmacist, or pharmacy network. Mm-hmm. Network. We have to work as a team. Okay, as a team, and that we have to show with this type of networking, like 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 pharmacies, like cardinal pharmacies, we show some outcomes. We show something good, beneficial, mm-hmm. you know, something good to the patient. And then we go and approach Google. Then we go and approach Amazon. We go and approach, IBM, and you tell them, look, this 7,000 pharmacies, this is what they are doing. And they can contain your costs and make your employees healthier, better. Would you be willing to contract with us directly? Directly.
Right. Go direct.
Okay.
Take the others.
Directly. And then compensate us for what we do. That's the way it should be. Mm-hmm. Because the PBM right now, there's nothing good that controls them. And there's no law that stops them what they were doing. And they're coming and throwing a contractual agreement in front of me. I can't even negotiate with them. Basically, I'm giving my neck to them, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And that's not right. That's not right. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
So I see things a little differently. I don't see any of those mechanics. I see basically three different approaches in the future. One is basically the doc in the box, which is what the chains are going to do, right? Mm-hmm. The chains are going to put their 5,000 square, 10,000 square foot store. They're going to have 100 or 200 feet where they have a nurse practitioner that's going to be taking care of people, and they'll be giving them medication prescriptions, and it'll probably be filled in the bigger box store, right? That's pretty simple. And that's a direct marketing approach that they have, but it's convenience. You're selling convenience. I see that for the colds. I see that kind of for the urgent care supplier, but I don't see that in the Medicare-based multi-drug chronic disease space. The second avenue I see is the Amazons of the world. Mm-hmm. Yesterday they bought up PayPax or something like that.
Yeah, I saw
and they're going to do a some sort of a delivery system, and they're going to have vans go out and give the patients their drugs. And so it's going to be central warehousing, and they're going to essentially be pull pushers and deliverers for a price, for a discounted price and increased patient convenience. So that clearly has appeal to people paying the bill, and it clearly has appeal to people receiving the medicine. But in terms of coordination of cost, and particularly coordination of medicines and information and the transferability of information, from what I understand of that model, that doesn't exist. So yes, my chronic disease patients, as an example, may get some of their medicines from a mail order, or maybe getting it some from Amazon, but they still need a place to coordinate and understand and be educated about their medicines, mm-hmm. and for the providers and the local pharmacists to be able to know that they're actually taking the medicines.
Face to face.
So basically, the Amazon model, I think, has some potential benefit for the independent pharmacist, because Amazon's not set up to do the back-end coordination. So the community pharmacist, I think, would be benefited there. The third model is what we're talking about now, having might be able to write the drugs and have coordination, education, biometric outcomes delivery, and information back to me
from a cardinal-like organization with independent pharmacists. But the important thing there is that that's the basis of what we've been talking about, that there has to be a standardized, quantifiable backbone of this, because the patient next week may go to a McKesson pharmacy, right?
Right, right?
And so there has to be common language. Common language with transportability, whether it's at the patient level, if you give them a flash drive, or at the back end where it's, you know, communicated through some drug silo or information silo warehouses. So the communication from the community pharmacist to the providers, as well as the outcomes that they show the patient right at the point of contact, is, I think, the model that I like to see.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I appreciate all of your guys' time today. Before we wrap it up, is there anything else you'd like to add and share with our listeners?
Yeah, I'd like to say something. We need help from Cardinal Group. The help, the best way to really come up with help is for us pharmacists, practicing pharmacists, to sit down with the top strategists or decision makers, and then to formulate a plan as soon as possible, because the current system is not viable. Many of us will close. Even though I have a very busy practice, the margins are dwindling, you know, and that's not conducive to good business. This is the only business that I see. If you really practice in an honest way, you're losing income.
Yeah.
I mean, you are a hardworking pharmacist. You work day and night, and then you lose income in a capitalistic society. I've never seen like that. Even communism. In communism, right. It's not like that. You know, at least you know what you are going to get. But here, it's going down. It's not right. So we need to sit down and talk and share viable information and come up with something that is tangible that is beneficial for all parties involved.
Okay.
I mean, something as simple for me as a practitioner. My patients are going all over the country, right? And so if Cardinal had 7,000 exactly. independent pharmacists, I would love to know that there's a Asian-based pharmacy that's Asian cultural and language perspectives mm-hmm. in Oklahoma or Washington yeah. as well as 2 miles away. So the ability for Cardinal to be able to look at their resources and help the providers to marshal the network as opposed to the independent onesie pharmacists is critical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent point.
Well, there's one other, just to complement that, because right now the present system in the doctor's offices, when the doctor wants to prescribe a prescription electronically, suddenly Walgreens is popping up.
Mm-hmm.
Why Walgreens is popping up? And most doctors, they're not as up to date as Dr. Levy. Dr. Levy knows where to send the prescription to, who is the right person, who is not the right person. But suddenly this is what is popping up. Why Walgreens is popping up? Discharge in hospitals. Suddenly Walgreens is popping up. Why Walgreens is popping
yeah,
up?
Yeah.
And they're not giving that choice to the patient. And they're sending discharge prescriptions to Walgreens,
mm-hmm.
you know. So we have to work. There's a lot of things. We have to get involved as soon as possible. We have to really plan. And then we have to move fast because the market is changing.
Yeah. Peter, anything that you would like to add? Or?
Not really. I think this is, you know, a new model we should really export, you know, so that will benefit the smaller, you know, ethnic community.
Okay. Well, again, I thank you all for your time. I think you've given our listeners a lot of informative information, and it was great speaking with all three of you today.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Again, this is Nicole McClure with the Pharmacy Podcast Network, bringing you a special series with Cardinal Health. Check out all our podcasts at pharmacypodcast.com.
You were listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network's leading marketing podcast, Pharmacy Marketing Simplified, sponsored by the proven leader in pharmacy business development and support, GRX Marketing. For more proven strategies and ideas on marketing your pharmacy business, check out grxmarketing.com.